I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Concerned about the offshoring of jobs overseas, U.S. Chamber of Commerce President Thomas Donahue has two words for you. Stop whining. In a speech to a California audience last week, Donahue said offshoring saves companies money, which they can then use to create new jobs for Americans. Yet projections from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the fastest growing occupations over the next 8 years are overwhelmingly low wage. Government estimates also suggest as many as 250,000 jobs a year are lost to offshoring, but Donahue calls the figure anecdotal. Meanwhile, the California state legislator is debating two bills designed to stem the flow of jobs overseas. One would ban the use of offshoring by contractors doing work for the state. The other would require California companies to disclose how many jobs they transfer out of the country.
Jeffrey Sachs, special advisor to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, told reporters Wednesday on the eve of an Africa summit that countries in Africa won't be able to reach their goal of cutting poverty in half if they repay their foreign debts. Sachs called on wealthy countries to forgive Africa's $201 billion debt burden, but said if the debt isn't canceled, then African countries should refuse to repay, saying, quote, "The time has come to end this charade."
U.S. Pipe and Foundry has agreed to pay $6.5 million to settle a lawsuit filed by black employees that alleged discrimination. In addition, the Birmingham, Alabama-based firm said it will create a fairness advisory council to share job openings with all employees and to train supervisors not to discriminate. The lawsuit was filed in federal court in December of 2000. The agreement includes all employees employed between now and January 1998 at the company's plants in Tennessee, Alabama, and New Jersey. And it looks like Enron's biggest fish is now in the frying pan. Former chairman Ken Lay was indicted by a federal grand jury in Houston yesterday. He's expected to face criminal charges related to insider trading, and he may be hit with civil penalties from the Securities and Exchange Commission. More than 20,000 employees lost more than $1 billion when Enron collapsed in 2001 and took their 401ks with it. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis of military discharge statistics by scholars at the University of California at Santa Barbara shows nearly 6,300 people were let go from the armed forces between 1998 and 2003 for violating its Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on homosexuality. 1% of those were officers. The majority were enlisted men. 770 soldiers were discharged last year for being gay, and the Army boots them out the most. It was responsible for 41% of all discharges in the past 6 years.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. And after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
It's time for another Gooberhead Award, issued periodically to people in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's Goober goes to an organization that marches under the majestic banner of Move America Forward. MAF would have you believe that it's a nonpartisan mass movement of patriots supporting our troops and the commander-in-chief in the war on terrorism. But the majesty of this outfit shrinks to minuscule when you peek behind MAF's red, white, and blue curtain and see that it's nothing but three pathetic right-wingers with a Mr. Microphone. Move America Forward is a front group set up only last month by the Republican PR firm of Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, which pocketed some $2.5 million in payments from Republican politicians in the last election cycle. Far from being patriots, these hired flacks set up MAF to engage in a decidedly unpatriotic act of selectively canceling the First Amendment. What has their knickers in a knot is that Michael Moore's dynamite new movie, Fahrenheit 9-1-1, is being shown in theaters all across America. Apparently, Russo, Marsh, and Rogers don't believe in the principles of free speech and open debate, at least not if these principles allow open criticism of their beloved King George W. So these gooberheads launched MAF to trash Moore and try to prevent theaters from presenting his movie. On their website, they published the addresses of major theater chains, asking rabid Bush supporters to deluge the chains with demands to shut out Moore. Tell the industry executives that we don't want this misleading and grotesque movie being shown in our local cinema, shrieked the PR hacks. This is Jim Hightower saying, whether or not you like Moore, no true American can like this goofy, totally un-American stab at censorship. The best way to show up these goobers is to go see the movie and judge it for yourself. That's the American way.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it's 62 degrees here in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, but I'd say the heat is being turned up in Washington, D.C. Greetings, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast-to-coast, border-to-border on terrestrial radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite. Satellites, actually. Three of them up there. And beaming around the planet from radiopower.org. Anyhow, very, very happy to be back with you and on this beautiful day. And it's just remarkable what is happening with this political campaign right now. And there's some really extraordinary news that I want to share with you here. Leading up to it, as it were. I mean, you know, the first of all, there's this just absolutely amazing story in the New Republic right now that basically is suggesting that the Bush administration is putting pressure on Pakistan to bring out Osama bin Laden, but not just any old time. They want him specifically to be specifically arrested and released with all the appropriate fanfare during the 3 days of the Democratic National Convention. I'll share some details from that with you, including quotes from people within the Pakistani intelligence service, right to that effect. And I want to give you some background on this. Looking back, where does this kind of a mindset come from? Well, it's nothing new. In fact, this is something that the Reagan-Bush campaign was all about, and something that's just going to blow your socks off from that. Before we get to that, what we're seeing is that on the right, the attacks against John Kerry seem to be basically, he looks French. I don't know what his ancestry is. I thought Kerry was an Irish Catholic name, but I may be wrong. But in any case, he looks French. Reduced to ridicule, making fun of his wife's name. These are signs of desperation. These kinds of things indicate, almost a pathetic lack of substance. There's no there there. As Kerry said, Bush doesn't have a record to run on. He's got a record to run from. Ironically, they're coming out and they're attacking John Edwards, of course, for being a trial lawyer. Ann Coulter a couple days ago.
And I just like how all the same criminal defense attorneys go from defending OJ to defending Clinton to defending Saddam Hussein.
All the criminal defense, like the one that George Bush hired a couple of weeks ago when he got interrogated about the Valerie Plame outing. They've got these attacks going on. And then they're running this ad. And there's this extraordinary irony around the ad, which I will share with you in just a moment. But the ad is called First Choice. And, it features John McCain talking fondly about George Bush. Of course, he was introducing George Bush at a speech. In fact, he probably didn't even write the words he was speaking. They were probably written by George Bush's speechwriter, because these things are very, very tightly scripted by the White House. But in any case, that ad is running, and the implication is that Kerry really wanted McCain to run with him. And, I just find it so ironic. The Democrats, of course, on their website have been playing an ad that just has a few audio clips from John McCain sharing his candid thoughts about George W. Bush. Here's a few.
Governor Bush wants to give 38% of his tax cuts to the wealthiest 1% of Americans. My friends, I don't think Bill Gates needs a tax cut.
Well, Bill Gates got one. He got a huge one. He got a multi-million dollar tax cut. And probably actually even billions over the long term, when you figure how much the guy is worth, and how much of his income is a consequence of dividends, which you pay no payroll tax and you only pay a 15% income tax on. Anyhow, McCain continues.
Mistakes happen in war. That's why we try to avoid them. Mistakes have been made.
Governor Bush's proposal has not one new penny for Social Security, not one penny for to pay down the debt, and not one penny for Medicare.
We've seen, except for that Medicare part, which is now, the whole thing about the lies. We've got an interesting story on that. We'll get to that in a little bit. Back to McCain.
There's a difference there. He puts all of the surplus into tax cuts. I don't think we need that. And by the way, 38% of his tax cut goes to the wealthiest 1%.
What? This is a Republican site. Yeah, of course. McCain is actually a fiscal conservative.
Of Americans. I don't think they need that now. I think working families need the tax cut rather than the wealthiest.
Governor Bush is one of the great polluters in history. The air quality in Texas has gone down.
Yeah, so the thoughts about George W. Bush from John McCain. But what's particularly ironic is that, the implication that Edwards might be Kerry's second choice, of course, Kerry is on record as saying he never offered the job to John McCain. In fact, he never offered the job to anybody until he offered it to John Edwards, which is what you would expect. You don't just go out and say, hey, you want to be my vice president? There may have been contacts between the two campaigns, but it's a whole different thing. So there was no, Kerry's first choice was Edwards. It just boils down to that. His only choice. But here's the irony. On March 18th of this year, just a few months ago, John McCain was on the Today Show. He was being interviewed, and somebody asked him about his interest in being John Kerry's vice president. See, this is a story that I think, if it wasn't manufactured by the Republicans, it was certainly manufactured by the media. Because keep in mind, the media really likes nothing more than a horse race. Gee, if we can get a lot of people really excited about something, then they'll watch more TV and our ratings will go up and we can sell more advertising. Keep in mind, it's all about, you know, making money. And so there it goes. So the media want to, you know, a fusion ticket, wouldn't it be amazing? I mean, that would be, people would be glued to their TVs if you had a Democrat and a Republican on the same ticket. So, you know, this is a big media thing. So anyhow, they got on the Today Show on March 18th, they got John McCain there. And they ask him, are you interested in being vice president for Kerry or for Bush, for anybody? And he says, and I quote, I'm not running for vice president. President Bush in 2000 asked me if I was interested in being vice president. I said no then. I'm not interested in being vice president now. Wait a minute. Here you have John McCain saying that George Bush asked him to be vice president before he asked Cheney to. Well, actually, he never asked Cheney to. You'll recall, Dick Cheney was hired by the Bush campaign to conduct the search for an appropriate vice presidential candidate. And Cheney concluded that better than John McCain, better than any of the, you know, fairly competent Republicans out there, the best candidate would be he himself. And that he, you know, and so he recommended himself, and George W., of course, took the recommendation. But apparently Bush himself had first asked John McCain, and McCain turned him down. So Cheney was Bush's second choice. Very, very interesting. Barbara Honegger, in 1980, was part of the Reagan-Bush presidential transition team. In 1981, she worked in the White House Office of Policy Development as a research and policy analyst, and her last employment in Washington was at the Department of Justice. She wrote an amazing book called October Surprise, and told, you know, from the inside. I mean, she was part of the transition team. And one of the questions that has had people who remember that era, who remember the early 1980s, you know, keeping in mind this is 25 years ago, 24 years ago, 23 years, anyhow, 24, 25 years. The people who remember that time, and I'm certainly one of them, are still scratching their heads and wondering, why was it that, well, let me set up the chronology here. In 1980, you know, the year of the election, months before the election, in Iran, the students took the Ayatollah Khomeini, whoever you want to say, took hostage a group of American diplomats. 52 of them, 52 Americans were taken hostage. Actually, they were first taken hostage on November 4th, 1970. Okay, so it was almost exactly a year before the election. And as time went on, and Carter was way ahead of Reagan. Way ahead of Reagan. And it was clear that if it wasn't for this hostage thing, Carter was going to win by 5 or 6 points nationwide. And those of you who were alive back then, you remember that. This is no spin. This is any newspaper archive. But the hostages just kept being held and held, and Carter had Americans praying for them, and people had yellow ribbons out, and after 6, 8, 9 months, and they had a failed rescue effort, and after 9 months, 10 months, 11 months, it started looking like Carter was a failure. And the hostages were held until 1 hour after Ronald Reagan was sworn into office. Carter lost the election, and he would have won it had those hostages not been held. Now, within a month or so after Reagan gets sworn in, now keep in mind, the hostages have been freed now. Iran is holding no American hostages. within a few months, within a month or so after Reagan gets sworn in, he begins selling missiles to Iran against the law, absolutely against the law, an enemy of the United States who had held our hostages. Now, more hostages were taken in Lebanon, but not until 80, either 83 or 85. It was a couple. It was three or five years later. So there were no hostages. And yet, the rationale, for some reason that most people remember, is that Reagan was swapping arms for hostages. What hostages? There were no hostages. Which leads, of course, to Barbara Honegger's suggestion that this was really a payoff. And that Reagan continued selling these weapons to Iran even after it had been exposed, because they were blackmailing him. And what were they blackmailing him about? That George Bush and Bill Casey had cut this deal. I'll tell you about it right after the break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes after the hour. This is an absolutely amazing story. But where we're going with this, into what's happening right now with this Bush administration in Pakistan, is even more amazing. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Goodbye, George. George, goodbye, goodbye.
Yeah, 117 days, I believe it is, from today. Regime change.
Too bad. Goodbye, goodbye.
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in. As Barbara Honegger says in October Surprise, the phrase October Surprise actually is a phrase that the Reagan-Bush committee, campaign committee, which was headed up by William Casey. William Casey had been a spy with the OSS during World War II inside Germany. Here's a guy who'd actually gotten inside Hitler's operation. He's a brilliant spook. And he was, you know, made head of the CIA by Reagan. And he was the head of the Reagan-Bush campaign. And his fate was particularly interesting. I'll share that with you in a moment. Anyhow, October Surprise was, they assumed that Carter was going to do an October Surprise. And this is Michael Deaver, who was Reagan's top aide, his right-hand man, in his book, in the book that Michael Deaver himself wrote, says, quote, "One of the things we had concluded early on was that a Reagan victory would be nearly impossible if the hostages were released before the election. There is no doubt in my mind that the euphoria of a hostage release would have rolled over the land like a tidal wave. Carter would have been a hero, and many of the complaints against him forgotten. He would have won." End of quote. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a couple calls before we dig a little deeper into this. Damien in Springfield, Massachusetts is on the line. Hey, Damien, what's up? I believe you're on the line. Damien, if you can hear me, I can't hear you. Try calling back. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Eureka, California is on the line. Or is that... this is Damien here. Well, that's spooky. I'm not hearing... And is that Dave or Damien? Neither. Huh. Both have vanished. I don't get it. Anyhow, 26 minutes past. See, this is what happens. You do liberal talk radio, Johnny Ashcroft gets into your phone system, and who knows? Anyhow, this was the October Surprise. With a campaign manager, Barbara Honegger writes, with a campaign manager who had been responsible for clandestine operations inside Hitler's Germany, and a vice presidential candidate, George Bush, who had been director of the Central Intelligence Agency when it intervened to affect the outcome of national elections, it was perhaps inevitable that the Reagan-Bush campaign, upon hearing about the window of vulnerability, would be tempted to apply the covert methods it had used to interfere with the political processes of other nations at home. And Reagan, again, quoting from Barbara Honegger, Reagan-Bush campaign manager William Casey wasted no time putting together teams to develop and put into action counter-strategies to neutralize an October surprise by President Carter. In July of 1980, he used the term intelligence operation in a breakfast with reporters on the second day of the Republican National Convention. Inside the campaign's national headquarters in Arlington, Virginia, however, the intelligence operations were known as the October Surprise Groups. Richard Allen estimated as many as 120 foreign policy and national security advisors worked with this. But, you know, the bottom line is that Honegger suggests that George Bush went over, or Bill Casey, or both of them together, went over to France, negotiated with the Iranians, and said, you hang on to the hostages, and we get elected, and we will sell you missile parts. And she wraps the book with this absolutely remarkable insight, which is mind-boggling. President Reagan, this is the epilogue, President Reagan signed intelligence authorizations in 1984 and 1985, which were considered licenses to kill, according to top government officials. As we have seen, Oliver North and Amiram Nir's U.S.-Israeli covert operations were authorized by a still-secret accord, never revealed to the Congressional Intelligence Committees. And, you know, she goes through this whole thing. And then, what happened to William Casey? Well, I'll tell you about that right after this break. It is just incredible. What happened to William Casey as this thing started to unravel. Those of you who don't remember, those of you who do remember, you already know where I'm going with this. But, and I'm going to wrap this up fairly quickly and get now to what George is doing with Pakistan to try to sabotage the Democratic National Convention. This is amazing stuff, folks. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum, a public citizen, outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with three current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Anderson were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
the Tom Hartman Program.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And speaking of sympathy for the devil, this is really it. I mean, this is just incredible. Right after Reagan signed the intelligence authorizations, which were considered licenses to kill, according to Honegger, here's what happened. William Casey, CIA director, who reportedly attended, I'm reading from Honegger's book, who reportedly attended meetings in Paris, France on October 19th and 20th, 1980, and she lays out all the details of this, with Iranian officials and agents of French intelligence to arrange an arms for hostages delay deal with Iran. The morning of his first scheduled under oath testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the Secret Iran Initiative, okay, he was just about to go into, it was the morning that Bill Casey, who was the director of the CIA, who had been a spy in World War II, gotten inside Hitler's intelligence apparatus, inside Germany, a brilliant spook, was the head of the CIA, he had been the head of the Reagan-Bush campaign, apparently put together the October surprise thing along with George H.W. Bush, and he finally, you know, and then the Senate starts investigating this, 1987. And he finally says, okay, you know, I'll testify. The morning of his first scheduled under oath testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee on the Secret Iran Initiative, he was struck by seizures in his CIA headquarters office in Langley, Virginia, and underwent speech incapacitating left brain surgery shortly thereafter. The left temporal lobe of the brain is the part of the brain that controls speech. They went in and took it out. You know how the mob, you know, they would cut people's tongues out? Well, this is a little high-tech way. Had he lived to testify, according to his lawyer, Milton Gould, who is on record saying this, Casey would have told the, quote, entire truth. But he died as a result of the surgery on May 6th, 1987. And then she goes through the list about 30-some-odd other people who coincidentally died who were part of the operation. Very, very strange. 1-866-889-8894. Let's try this again. Is that Damien in Springfield, Massachusetts? Are you there?
Yes, Tom.
Hey, great. It's working now. Hey, Damien,
thank
what's
you.
Up?
Thank you. I guess Mr. Ashcroft decided to let me on.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it was really a screw-up on my part. I had the buttons mixed up. But anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you for letting me on. No, I enjoy your show immensely, even though I'm one of those neocons you rile against.
Mm-hmm.
I very much enjoy your show even more than the conservative competitors on this time of day.
Thank you.
I do have 2 points I'd like to mention. You made a premise at the beginning, beginning of this segment,
mm-hmm.
That President Carter would have won,
yeah.
Had not been for the Contras crisis, based on polling done in November of 1979. I'm not sure if you can actually use that as a viable premise because, you know, just recent polling would show that most incumbent presidents are in the lead.
Well, not
1 year out before election.
Not always, you know, it's definitely not always. And no, I didn't say that was based on polling done a year in advance. Actually, Honegger has, you know, throughout her book, she has all the polling that was being done by the Republicans on this thing, and their polling was showing that if the hostages were released, Carter would definitely win all the way up to election day.
Well, I think you would. No, you can make that type of premise. But I think you also, no, one point that I don't think was made, I've never read this book, so I can't go into it in too much detail, was, no, at the time, I'm 32 years old, and so I was very young during the 80 election.
Yeah.
But I do remember some of the things around that time, that I've always been very political, even as a young child. And we did have a very bad economy, I don't know if you can do a but for with this cautious crisis, as to when Carter or Reagan would have won.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember that time, Reagan was viewed as a crackpot extremist. George H.W. Bush had called his economic policies voodoo economics. You know, a year out, nobody gave him a chance. If it hadn't been for the hostages being held, I mean, here's the bottom line, and any rational history of that era would agree with this. If it hadn't been for the hostage crisis, Jimmy Carter would be president right now, or would have been president in 1980. He would have won the 1980 election.
Okay, I would disagree with that, but no, we'll leave it at that. The other one is you also stated that an arms deal to Iran within a few months of Reagan's inauguration before any of the Lebanese hostages were taken.
Right.
I don't know. I have not read the Tower Commission report in quite some time, but I myself don't recall any exchanges before the Lebanese hostages. I don't know. Is that coming from the Tower Commission or from the October Surprise book?
Well, a little bit of all of the above. One of the problems with the Tower Commission inquiry was that at the demand and request of the Republicans who set this thing up, the official investigation was not allowed to look at anything prior to what happened in 1980. What was it? 83 or 85?
I believe 83.
Yeah, 83. And so they put an absolute firewall there and said you can't look at anything that happened before then. So, but there were documented arms sales to Iran within the first months after Reagan came into office. Well documented arms sales. They may not have been in the congressional report, but they were well documented.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure. And nobody involved, by the way, is contesting that. Okay.
Yes.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, Damien. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, Carter was and is the most honorable human being, and I was hoping the United Nations might retain him to oversee our next election.
But, yeah. We could use it.
Yeah, I so value your program. I wanted to prevail upon your extensive knowledge of history here because it's causing me to explore some thoughts. Emperors and dictators have, throughout history, invaded other countries, and they've done it for all kinds of wrong reasons, to obtain wealth, to expand their sphere of power, whatever. And they've needed justifications to do it, justifications to gain the support of people, justifications to deceive the public.
All right, what's your point there, Dave?
Well, I believe that's question. Where we're at right now.
Oh, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. I it's really scary. And in fact, I want to get onto the details about it. Thanks for calling, Dave. Chris in Milwaukee, real quick. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better.
I have to get that book. It sounds great.
It's been out of print forever. You'll have to find it on like abebooks.com or eBay or something because it came out. It was out for about 2 months, and the publishing company that brought it out got bought out by a company that nobody'd ever heard of, and then that company folded. And the talk on the street was that it was a CIA front company. Who knows? But the book has just vanished. I mean, it's still out there. I have two copies that I've bought online, but, hardcovers.
I'll have to be resourceful.
Yeah, it's called October Surprise by Barbara Honegger. Gary Sick also wrote one. This was a Tudor, T-U-D-O-R, publishing company. No longer exists. Anyhow, your point, Chris.
On the progress report, I think today or yesterday, they mentioned a July surprise that they're looking for during the Democratic convention.
Well, that's where I'm going with this whole thing.
Okay. I wanted to get back to what you mentioned, McCain being offered the vice presidency in 2000. Where did you get that?
That was a quote from John McCain himself. On March 18th on the Today Show, March 18th of this year, he said, quote, "I'm not running for vice president. President Bush in 2000 asked me if I was interested in being vice president. I said no then. I'm not interested in being vice president now."
Okay. In your prediction about Bush dropping Cheney, there's an article in the New York Times today where Alphonse D'Amato recommends that he drops Cheney for Powell or McCain.
Yeah, see, these are they're trial balloons. These guys are they're testing the waters. They're testing public opinion. And mark my words, they are going to dump Cheney. He is becoming such a liability, and he may well end up actually being brought. You know, their criminal indictments may be being brought against him in the next few months, certainly in France, if not here in the United States. So,
interesting, really.
Yeah, the Security and Exchange Commission just this week opened an investigation into the supervision of Halliburton's bribery of Nigerian officials in 1999 when he was running Halliburton.
Really?
Yeah. This could be huge. This could be prison time.
I was kind of thinking, I wonder if Bush Cheney wins the election, that it'll maybe be kind of like Nixon, where they won the election but then went down after.
Yep. The only way that was possible, and the only way that would be possible, is if the Democrats held at least one of the two houses of Congress.
Well, we'll work on that.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Thanks for calling. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Okay, here's the article. This is in the New Republic Online, www.tnr.com. It is really worth reading this thing. It's called Pakistan for Bush, July Surprise. by John D. Judas, Spencer Ackerman, and Masoud Ansari. And here, I'll just read a few excerpts from this because it's just so mind-boggling. This spring, the administration significantly increased its pressure on Pakistan to kill or capture Osama bin Laden, his deputy al-Zawahiri, or the Taliban's Muhammad Omar, all of whom are believed to be hiding in the lawless tribal areas of Pakistan. A succession of high-level American officials, from outgoing CIA Director George Tenet to Secretary of State Colin Powell to Assistant Secretary of State Christina Rocha, to State Department Counterterrorism Chief Kofor Black, to top CIA South Asia official, have visited Pakistan in recent months to urge General Parv in recent months, just recently, to urge General Parv Musharraf's government to do more in the war on terrorism. In April, Zalmay Khalilzad, the American ambassador to Afghanistan, publicly chided the Pakistanis for providing a sanctuary for al-Qaeda and Taliban forces. This public pressure would be appropriate, even laudable, notes the New Republic, had it not been accompanied by an unseemly private insistence that the Pakistanis deliver these high-value targets, or HVTs, before Americans go to the polls in November. According to one source in Pakistan's powerful inter-service intelligence, ISI, that's like the CIA, quote, the Pakistani government is really desperate and wants to flush out bin Laden and his associates after the latest pressures from the U.S. administration to deliver before the upcoming U.S. elections. Another official, this one from the Pakistani Interior Ministry, which is responsible for internal security, explains, quote, the Musharraf government has a history of rescuing the Bush administration. They now want Musharraf to bail them out when they are facing hard times in the coming elections. He doesn't want his name used because he could go to prison for 10 years for speaking. Keep in mind, Pakistan is a dictatorship. It is not a democracy. Musharraf was the head of the military. He overthrew a democratically elected government. A third source, an official who works under ISI's director, Lieutenant General Ihsan El-Haq, informed TNR that the Pakistanis, quote, have been told at every level that apprehension or killing of high-value targets before the election is an absolute must. What's more, this source claims that Bush administration officials have told their Pakistani counterparts they have a date in mind for achieving this, for announcing this achievement. This is a quote here. The last 10 days of July deadline has been repeatedly given by visitors to Islamabad and during Al-Haq's meetings in Washington. The last 10 days of July. Gee, what's going on there? According to an ISI official, the White House told Al-Haq, this is, you know, the head spook, right? Told Al-Haq last spring that, quote, it would be best if the arrest or killing of any HVT were announced on 26, 27, or 28 July. End quote. By, I'm sure, just an absolute sheer coincidence, those are the first 3 days of the Democratic National Convention in Boston. They go on to note in the New Republic that the Bush administration has matched this public and private pressure with enticements and threats. The old carrot and stick routine. In March, when Powell was in Islamabad, he designated Pakistan a major non-NATO ally, which allows them to buy U.S. weaponry. But they're really desperate to get from us F-16s. Pakistan wants F-16s because it'll allow them to go head-to-head with India. And so Powell said, okay, we're going to designate you a major non-NATO ally. That means that you can buy our weapons. And this, ignoring the fact that A.Q. Khan, the nuclear physicist, that Musharraf had pardoned. Now, you know, there are conspiracy theories within conspiracy theories about why that happened. But this guy, this Pakistani nuclear scientist, had sold nuclear secrets to Iran, North Korea, and Libya. And he's still walking around loose in Pakistan. And Powell said, well, this is an internal issue to Pakistan. We will invade Iraq because they may have nuclear weapons. But when Pakistan sells the ability to produce nuclear weapons to North Korea, to Libya, and to Iran, it's an internal matter. Seriously, that's what Colin Powell said. It's an internal matter. We're not going to take a position on it. At the same time, the Bush administration is right now aggressively trying to push through Congress $3 billion for Pakistan. Democrats are fighting this. They're saying, okay, if we're going to give Pakistan this kind of money, the least they can do is either A, stop building nuclear weapons and stop sharing them with terrorist countries, and B, have an election, become a democratic country. That Musharraf has been doing the opposite. He's been cracking down harder and harder. It's becoming more and more of a dictatorship over there. So Powell has kind of implied, apparently, well, here, this is a quote from this article in the New Republic. And the Pakistanis fear that if they don't produce an HVT, keeping in mind, you know, HVT, a high-value target, basically Osama bin Laden, before, you know, for the Democratic National Convention, they won't get the planes. Hey, go on to note, Bush's strategy could work. Musharraf has, over the last several months, significantly increased military activity in the tribal areas that Pakistani soldiers have not set foot into in 50 years. They're risking a civil war to get that $3 billion in these jets and to deliver Osama bin Laden in time for the Democratic National Convention. Amazing, huh? 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new, and you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the workers
Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award by claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackouts that deprived hospitals, schools, homes, and just about everybody else in California. And to make matters even worse, Reliant, at the time that it was intentionally shutting down its power plants, was publicly blaming the shutdowns on environmentalists.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House with three current and former top executives that are Rangers, people contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush re-election campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000.
So this is a highly partisan company, and that may explain why a company that has a criminal indictment against it would still be successful in securing prominent federal contracts.
Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Andersen were barred from federal contracts when they were in.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Sometimes it's bad when the going gets tough. Yeah, we look in the mirror. Yeah, we wanna give up.
And welcome back.
Sometimes you don't even want to try.
Ah, but you got to.
Sometimes we cry.
Yeah, no. Sometimes you got to get up and fight. Sometimes you got to speak out, tell the truth. With all due respect to Van Morrison, here last month, from the New Republic, this article, www.tnr.com, you can find it. The July surprise. Last month, Pakistan killed a powerful Waziristan warlord and al-Qaeda ally, Nek Mohammed, in a dramatic rocket attack that villagers said bore American fingerprints. They claim a U.S. spy plane had been circling overhead. Through these efforts, the Pakistanis, say the authors of this TNR piece, through these efforts, the Pakistanis could bring in bin Laden, Mullah Omar, or Zawahiri, a significant victory in the war on terrorism that would bolster Bush's reputation among voters. Now, let's give a little credit. Isn't bringing in these people a good thing? Sure. Absolutely. I mean, it's great. I mean, finally, they're getting around to it. But why not last year? Why not the year before? It was September of 2001 that apparently bin Laden, struck the United States. Why have we waited? Why have we not put this pressure on Pakistan? Why didn't we do this last year? Why didn't we do it the year before? Well, TNR says top Pakistanis think they know the answer to that question. Here's the question. Pushing Musharraf to go after al-Qaeda in the tribal areas may be a good idea despite the risks, but if that's the case, it was a good idea in 2002 and 2003. Why the switch now? Top Pakistanis think they know the answer. This year, the president's re-election is at stake. It's just an absolutely remarkable story in the New Republic Online, www.tnr.com. Pakistan for Bush, July Surprise by Judas Ackerman and Ansari. And well worth checking out. So are we about to see another October surprise The first one brought to us courtesy of George H.W. Bush in October of 1980. Well, actually, you know, October, November, December, January. Is there going to be another one? And might it even happen in July? An interesting question. Let's keep our eyes open. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Concerned about the offshoring of jobs overseas, U.S. Chamber of Commerce President Thomas Donahue has two words for you: stop whining. In a speech to a California audience last week, Donahue said offshoring saves companies money, which they can then use to create new jobs for Americans. Yet projections from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the fastest growing occupations over the next 8 years are overwhelmingly low wage. Government estimates also suggest as many as 250,000 jobs a year are lost to offshoring, but Donahue calls the figure anecdotal. Meanwhile, the California state legislature is debating two bills designed to stem the flow of jobs overseas. One would ban the use of offshoring by contractors doing work for the state. The other would require California companies to disclose how many jobs they transfer out of the country.
Jeffrey Sachs, special advisor to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, told reporters Wednesday on the eve of an Africa summit that countries in Africa won't be able to reach their goal of cutting poverty in half if they repay their foreign debts. Sachs called on wealthy countries to forgive Africa's $201 billion debt burden, but said if the debt isn't canceled, then African countries should refuse to repay, saying, quote, "The time has come to end this charade."
U.S. Pipe and Foundry has agreed to pay $6.5 million to settle a lawsuit filed by black employees that alleged discrimination. In addition, the Birmingham, Alabama-based firm said it will create a fairness advisory council to share job openings with all employees and to train supervisors not to discriminate. The lawsuit was filed in federal court in December of 2000. The agreement includes all employees employed between now and January 1998 at the company's plants in Tennessee, Alabama, and New Jersey. And it looks like Enron's biggest fish is now in the frying pan. Former chairman Ken Lay was indicted by a federal grand jury in Houston yesterday. He's expected to face criminal charges related to insider trading, and he may be hit with civil penalties from the Securities and Exchange Commission. More than 20,000 employees lost more than $1 billion when Enron collapsed in 2001 and took their 401ks with it. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis of military discharge statistics by scholars at the University of California at Santa Barbara shows nearly 6,300 people were let go from the armed forces between 1998 and 2003 for violating its Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on homosexuality. 1% of those were officers. The majority were enlisted men. 770 soldiers were discharged last year for being gay, and the Army boots them out the most. It was responsible for 41% of all discharges in the past 6 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now, Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
War is not only hell, it's insane. We've seen the insanity in George W.'s war of lies in Iraq. WMDs that aren't there, perverted PR stunts about mission accomplished, the White House effort to redefine torture as being okay, the transfer of democratic power to a handpicked Iraqi regime that is not democratic and won't really wield power, etc. But our own leaders are not the only ones acting insane. The tiny nation of Macedonia has now learned that its leaders also have been caught up in the hellish insanity and depravity of Bush's self-declared unlimited war on the world's evildoers. In an effort to curry favor with Bush, the top officials in the right-wing government of this Balkan country plotted in late 2001 to show their commitment to Georgia's war on terror. Macedonian police commanders were dispatched to lure seven impoverished Muslim immigrants from Pakistan into their country. Believing they were on their way to jobs in Greece, the seven immigrants were taken in a minivan to a farm outside Macedonia's capital city. The van parked, the driver opened his door and fled, and a special terrorist unit of the police command opened fire, slaughtering all seven of the immigrants. Shortly after the ambush, Macedonia's top government officials announced that these seven had been Al-Qaeda holy warriors and that the police authorities had heroically thwarted their plan to conduct a terrorist attack on the U.S. embassy. The Bushites and U.S. media loudly hailed Macedonia's government as heroes in Georgia's global terrorist war, totally ignoring the pleas of families of the seven immigrants that their sons had zero connections to terrorists, unless you counted the insane cowards who had them murdered. This is Jim Hightower saying, Macedonia's cowardly leaders would have gotten away with their monstrous fabrication, except that they subsequently lost an election and the new government revealed the truth. There's been no comment from Bush.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR. But they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. Or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
You think I'd maybe hide some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine. Really.
No wonder Carrier is trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the expert.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. Broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border. And streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system on radio stations from California to West Virginia. And it's Thursday. It's the second hour of our Thursday program when we traditionally have on somebody who can tell us something that is, you know, more than we really had considered. It's everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe. Is everything you know... Well, actually, those of you who have been listening to this program regularly, probably not. Well, we'll see. Mark Umeli is the author of Bush Unplugged. And according to his bio here, he's George Bush's worst living nightmare. He's a gun-toting, NRA-belonging, Bambi-killing, former Republican-supporting, middle-class, hunky, white American male who has strip-searched Mr. Bush's history in the light of real Christian American values. And he's written this hard-knuckled knockout book exposing the true character of George W. and the deeply rooted anti-American insanity of the neoconservative agenda. Mark, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello, Tom. That's mighty bold talk from a one-eyed fat man. not that I'm a one-eyed fat man.
Okay. Neither am I, to the best of my knowledge. Let's not follow that. Let's instead follow the money trail. You say in your book that you learned at the knee of right-wing talk show hosts like Limbaugh that, if you want to know what's going on in the Clinton administration and politics, follow the money. And you decided to do that. Is that a good description here?
Yeah, exactly. Years of being frustrated with the Democrats not holding George Bush's feet to the fire on many issues. When I decided to write Bush Unplugged, I thought that because I have sort of a right-wing sensibility in a lot of ways, I decided to go after frame my thesis according to... I asked myself this question. If George Bush were a Democrat, how would the Rush Limbaughs and the Karl Roves of the world frame their political critique of him?
Yeah.
So I went along that thought process.
Yeah. Let me back you up just a little bit, though, here, Mark. You were a regular listener to Rush. You describe yourself as a former Republican. What was the turning point for you?
Well, I'm a former Republican supporter. I've been a member of the NRA for 30 years. And, when you contribute to the NRA and their political funds, guess where that money goes? Largely to Republican candidates. The turning point for me started back when Bill Clinton was impeached over a personal infidelity.
Yeah.
And if I can elaborate on that a little bit, I had been following the deeds and actions of Al-Qaeda since 1993. I was living in New York at the time of the first World Trade Center bombing, and I realized in 1996 that Osama bin Laden had declared war officially on us.
Well, it was in the New York Times. I mean, they reprinted his entire letter in which he said,
correct,
you have to get your soldiers out of Saudi Arabia, and if you do not get these infidels out of this holy land, I will assault you in your own country.
That's right, and I talk about that in the book. So here we are. We were at war. A declared war against a deadly threat, a proven threat, who had killed Americans abroad and tried to kill Americans here. It did kill Americans here. Here we had this Republican attack machine going after Bill Clinton over sexual infidelity when, as it turns out, we find out now that from Richard Clark that he was, in fact, focusing on Al-Qaeda terrorist cells.
Well, but what came out of that was this, they wrote a book, they made a movie called Wag the Dog. The whole thing was, and Limbaugh was on the air every day. Oh, there he goes again. He's just trying to distract us from the fact that he got caught having sex in the White House. And how dare him, he's, what is with these terrorists? I mean, he just shot some missiles into Afghanistan. It's outrageous. He's just trying to distract us from the fact that he's being impeached.
Took out an aspirin factory in the Sudan.
Yeah.
When he was trying to get take a shot at bin Laden.
Yeah.
But as somebody who was informed and looking at that, I thought this is really dangerous, and it's going to come back to haunt us. And sure enough, it did.
Yeah. So you were at that point then apparently seeing through the partisanship and the BS on that side,
Absolutely, absolutely. And I contend this is why I wrote this book. I wrote this book for people like me, millions of people in this country who fall into that ideological center, leaning to the right, conservative Democrats, swing voters, independents, Republican moderates. I wrote this book with those folks in mind. That's why I call it The True Patriot's Guide to George W. Bush. I'm trying to cast a wider net and make it more inclusive. And what we're doing with the Bush Unplugged is asking everybody in the anti-Bush movement to join with us and to use Bush Unplugged as a way to influence those people in that ideological center so we could start shifting this country back. Just one way to start shifting this country back one by one. At the grassroots level, because right now we're run. I mean, this is not a right-wing country, Tom.
No,
we're not a right-wing country. Our people do not think like right-wing Republican radicals, but yet they control all three branches of our government. And right now we have an unprecedented opportunity because of all the mistakes that have been made and the glaring errors and the lies and the deceptions to break this juggernaut and shift this country, back to the center.
Yeah, at least, As our quote for the day from yesterday was from George Washington. He said, as mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. Interesting.
Well, it's really interesting that nowadays everybody who's quoting the Founding Fathers seems to be in the anti-Bush movement.
Yeah.
You can't find anybody in the Bush movement quoting the Founding Fathers because it flies in the face of their agenda.
Well, except when they're quoting John Adams justifying in 1798 passing the Alien and Sedition Acts and throwing into prison editors of newspapers who spoke out against him.
Okay, you can always pick out those few, those few circumstances
so we're talking,
in their favor, but
we're talking
sometimes it reeks of fascism when you do that.
It does, and that's what we have here. I mean, a dictionary definition of fascism, I mean, as written by Benito Mussolini, is the merger of business and state interests.
Yep.
Right. I mean, that's it. And what do we have here? I mean, I have had a contest going on for 7 months now, ever since I had Tom Tancredo on the show, the Republican congressman from Colorado, and I said, can you name one piece of legislation that has come out of the White House that was, promoted by the Republican Party and that was passed and signed into law that has as its primary beneficiary we the people instead of some corporation somewhere? And
that's
he was
right.
Unable to answer the question. And nobody has up to this point. I mean, I'm offering rewards, right, if somebody can do this. Anyway, we're talking with Mark Umile, U-M-I-L-E, the author of Bush Unplugged and The True Patriot's Guide to George W. Bush. Mark, before we go any farther, is there a website where people can find more information about this?
Yes, bushunplugged.com.
Okay, that's easy.
Can go there and read more about the book and also our program to take back America one by one.
Yeah, okay.
And we're recommending that people buy the book, read it, learn the language, and send the book to people that they know that they live in those purple states or people that they know that are working people. You know, if you don't make $250,000, you have no vested interest in supporting this administration.
Yeah.
So we need to reach out at the grassroots level and start changing hearts and minds to get this country on a sane track, not just for this election, but also going into 2006.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We've got about 4 minutes here left, Mark. I'm wondering what were the absolute raised the hair on the back of your neck worst things that you discovered? What were the things that you discovered in your research about George W. Bush that really got you going?
Wow. Whew, let me count the ways.
I'll
tell you what. If we can get this to get down to just a guttural, manly look at things. You know, George Bush is a man who has literally failed upwards in his life. I am somebody who really believes in succeeding by merit, and I think that's part of the fabric of this country. I always look at it, after looking at George Bush's career, whether it's his military career, his career as an oil man in Texas, his ownership, part ownership in the Texas Rangers, his governorship of Texas, and in addition to all of his brothers, there's a clear pattern here of
failing and getting richer.
Influence peddling of the highest order. Yeah. This is a man who never really had to develop a specific skill set other than trading on his father's name. And, what I discovered that, after looking at all this stuff, that if George Bush was not the son of George Bush Sr., he would have wound up selling used cars somewhere in some West Texas dust bowl.
Or he'd still be in jail for his cocaine arrest or for his drunken driving arrests.
And I set all that up for people to read to get a better understanding of who he is. That's why I say it from Christian American values. And then from there, I take it into the larger issues of his connections with Enron, and then the war on terrorism, Al-Qaeda, Islamic terrorism, Saudi Arabia, the ties with the Bush family ties with Saudi Arabia. I really get into that deeply, the weapons of mass destruction ruse. I bring in experts from, many, many fields that totally debunk the Bush rationale for going to war. These are people we haven't heard from yet on TV, and I think the American people need to hear that before the next election.
But Mark, Dick Cheney, I mean, just last week was saying there's a clear connection between Al-Qaeda and Osama bin and Saddam Hussein in Iraq.
Well,
is our vice president lying to us?
Yeah, I don't know if he's lying to us or he is just completely delusional. And, you know, I'm somebody who was looking at this issue as a researcher well before 9/11. And when I was hearing these accusations about ties from Al-Qaeda, between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, it was just appalling to me. Anybody who knows anything about Al-Qaeda knows that they are dedicated, deeply dedicated to the overthrow of secular leaders. There were some
in the Arab world. In the Arab world. See, here's the thing. Here's the thing that amazes me. You know, Mark, when George W. Bush says they hate us because of our values, they hate us because of our lifestyle. You know, I really can't imagine Osama and a bunch of people sitting around in Afghanistan saying, you know, look at those people over there. They've got women who you can see their belly buttons on TV. They've got McDonald's. They've got Dairy Queens. They let people vote. We've got to bomb them. I can't imagine that. I can't, you know, I just can't imagine that. I can easily take Osama at his word, what was said in the New York Times, get your soldiers out of our holy land.
That's right.
You know, and I mean,
right.
And they hate us because of our foreign policy.
He also said in that same speech, he said that there's no more important duty than pushing the American enemy out of the holy land, because the presence of the U.S. military forces on land, sea, and air, the states of the Islamic Gulf, is the greatest danger threatening the largest oil reserves in the world.
Yeah.
This is about money and power. It's
sure.
about American, you know, spreading our influence in the world and creating rage in the Muslim world.
And we have walked right into their trap. I mean, they
walked
said,
right
you
into
know,
the belly
please,
of the beast.
Yeah, please don't throw us in that briar patch. Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, it's Mark Umili. Mark, thanks for being with us today. The author of the book Bush Unplugged, bushunplugged.com, right, Mark?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, bushunplugged.com, the true patriot's guide to George W. Bush. Mark, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your information with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work, offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Why does the sun go on shining?
And welcome back.
Why does the sea rush to shore?
Tom Hartman here with you. Is it? It's the love song. I thought that was going to go somewhere silly. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you here. You've got to wonder if maybe George W. was just like, you know, instinctively programmed at some point in his life, perhaps because he had had so many failures. I mean, this is a characteristic that you see a lot. I was the executive director from 1978 to 1983. Of a residential treatment facility for severely abused children in New Hampshire, the New England-Salem Children's Village. And this was something that you commonly saw among really emotionally damaged kids who had had a lifetime of failure, particularly who had felt unloved by their parents. And, of course, we know, you know, W. was shipped off to prep school and shipped off to, you know, he didn't spend, his father was never home, and his mother, you know, after the day after his sister died, his parents went out and played golf. It was like, it was a very disconnected family. And we would see, you see these kids, their first instinct when confronted with anything is to lie. It's, you know, is to prevaricate, to, you know, shift the blame. And here we have, this is the whopper of the day. And it's particularly relevant, I think. Ken Lay, apparently today, is being indicted for high crimes and misdemeanors having to do with wiping out, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of investors, stealing, ultimately, or destroying, devastating, over $1 billion in pension funds of his employees and people who had invested in Enron stock around the world. And when this story first broke, that Ken Lay's Enron was going down the tubes and that Ken Lay was a bad guy, this was back in 2001. And in the Oval Office on January 10th, 2002, President George W. Bush was asked by a reporter about his relationship with Ken Lay. And this is what he said. Quote, "I got to know Ken Lay when he was head of the, what do they call, the Governor's Business Council in Texas. He was a supporter of Ann Richards in my run in 1994. Ann Richards is who George ran against. And she just named him the head of the governor's business council, and I decided to leave him in place just for the sake of continuity, and that's when I first got to know Kent. Yeah. So, the reality is that the Bush-Lay relationship goes back a long time. That Enron had contributed at that point over $1.14 million to George Bush's election campaign. That Ken Lay, throughout his years when he was running as governor against Ann Richards and others, from the very beginning, in the primaries and everything, Ken Lay was his largest lifetime patron. To this day, Ken Lay is George Bush's largest lifetime patron. Largely because the campaign laws have been changed, so the most one person can give is $2,000. When Bush and his family flew around in the 2000 primaries, he was flying on the Enron jet. So whenever he'd land in a city, he's standing in front of the Enron jet, the actual Enron jet. David DeLay writes, the first day of baseball season, Enron Field opened down in Houston. So Bush takes the Enron jet back there, and I'm reading the story. I'm thinking, oh, probably to throw out the first pitch, right? No, Kenny Boy was throwing out the first pitch. Bush just wanted to be there to watch. Bush had given Lay his own desk in the White House, and Lay had handpicked most of Bush's energy people, and not only he picked the head of the agency that regulated Enron, he picked the head of the Army, the Secretary of the Army, Thomas White, was the Enron vice president. He picked the White House counsel. He was an Enron lawyer. And on and on and on and on. Oh, but I didn't know him. He supported that other candidate. Yeah. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Concerned about the offshoring of jobs overseas? U.S. Chamber of Commerce President Thomas Donahue has two words for you. Stop whining. In a speech to a California audience last week, Donahue said offshoring saves companies money, which they can then use to create new jobs for Americans. Yet projections from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the fastest growing occupations over the next 8 years are overwhelmingly low wage. Government estimates also suggest as many as 250,000 jobs a year are lost to offshoring, but Donahue calls the figure anecdotal. Meanwhile, the California state legislature is debating two bills designed to stem the flow of jobs overseas. One would ban the use of offshoring by contractors doing work for the state. The other would require California companies to disclose how many jobs they transfer out of the country.
Jeffrey Sachs, special advisor to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, told reporters Wednesday on the eve of an Africa summit that countries in Africa won't be able to reach their goal of cutting poverty in half if they repay their foreign debts. Sachs called on wealthy countries to forgive Africa's $201 billion debt burden, but said if the debt isn't canceled, then African countries should refuse to repay, saying, quote, "The time has come to end this charade."
U.S. Pipe and Foundry has agreed to pay $6.5 million to settle a lawsuit filed by black employees that alleged discrimination. In addition, the Birmingham, Alabama-based firm said it will create a fairness advisory council to share job openings with all employees and to train supervisors not to discriminate. The lawsuit was filed in federal court in December of 2000. The agreement includes all employees employed between now and January 1998 at the company's plants in Tennessee, Alabama, and New Jersey. And it looks like Enron's biggest fish is now in the frying pan. Former chairman Ken Lay was indicted by a federal grand jury in Houston yesterday. He's expected to face criminal charges related to insider trading, and he may be hit with civil penalties from the Securities and Exchange Commission. More than 20,000 employees lost more than $1 billion when Enron collapsed in 2001 and took their 401ks with it. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis of military discharge statistics by scholars at the University of California at Santa Barbara shows nearly 6,300 people were let go from the armed forces between 1998 and 2003 for violating its Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on homosexuality. 1% of those were officers. The majority were enlisted men. 770 soldiers were discharged last year for being gay, and the Army boots them out the most. It was responsible for 41% of all discharges in the past 6 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Till the next time. Say goodbye. Till the next time, say goodbye.
And welcome back, 27 minutes past the hour, before the hour, excuse me. Yeah, Enron made campaign contributions totaling more than $5.7 million between 1989 and 2001. Republicans received 73% of this money. Former White House economic advisor Larry Lindsey was a consultant for Enron. Robert Zelnick also served on the Enron Advisory Council, drawing a salary in that position. Enron, in many respects, writes William Rivers Pitt, set about to write the Bush administration's energy policy. Ken Lay gave the White House a list of his personal recommendations for key federal energy posts. Lay pushed his list of suggested members of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in the spring of 2001. Two of the people he suggested, Pat Wood and Nora Brownell, were appointed by George Bush to positions that would directly affect the fate and fortunes of Enron. Unfortunately, they weren't able to hold it together. It was too corrupt. The infamous secret energy policy meetings, Pitt writes, run by Vice President Dick Cheney, the substance of which he still refuses to reveal, were riddled with Enron officials and Enron priorities. It's been speculated that one of the reasons Cheney refuses to divulge the elements of those meetings is that Enron was wielding the drafting pen as Bush's energy policy was created. It has also been speculated that the secrecy surrounding these meetings is due to the fact that the not-yet-begun Iraq war and the resulting petroleum pipeline profits yet to be reaped played a large role in those discussions. And that certainly seems to be the case as a result of the lawsuit from judicialwatch.org. Judicial Watch. 25 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. Chuck in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, you know, I've been enjoying your program, and I'm probably at least as cynical, if not more so, than you are. But there's some good news.
Okay.
And oddly enough, I don't know if you've seen this, but it's in Forbes.com, it's on the Financial Times, it's in CNN, it's in the Wall Street Journal today, that Pfizer Pharmaceuticals is coming up with a program for low income and very, very poor. And it works from deep discounts, which are not financially supported by the government. They have nothing to do with anything to do with insurance. And the very, very poorest of the poor can actually get 11 of Pfizer's most important life-saving drugs for free.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd say I'm not cynical. And just to set the record straight here, Chuck. And
okay.
And secondly,
okay,
yeah, let me make a cynical comment now about that. I read that story. In fact, I almost clipped it out to talk about today. I read the one in the Wall Street Journal, and it was on the wire service last night. It seems to me, here you've got a Democratic ticket that's talking about health care reform that is going to say, okay, we're going to get health care controls or health care costs under control in a way that is not under the control of Pfizer and its other big buddies. You know, there's a handful, really, of very large, huge corporations, huge multinational corporations that control the drug industry. And the pharmaceutical industry is the most profitable industry in America. It's more profitable than the oil industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's mind-bogglingly profitable.
No, I know. And so, made $30 billion last year.
Yeah, so I mean, so this is a preemptive strike, in my opinion. This is just, you know, okay, we're going to... It's like when John Rockefeller was being criticized in the 1880s. I think it was 91 or 1891, 1892. It was right around in there. Anyhow, John Rockefeller was being criticized for his monopoly practices, and he was, you know, running small business people out of business, and he was, you know, taking advantage of everybody, cranking up oil prices, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. What does he do? He hires a PR man, and he goes out on the streets of New York City and hands out brand new shiny dimes to the poor, to poor kids, basically. And because this was, you know, the era of the robber barons. They had done what George Bush is trying to do right now. They had wiped out the middle class, the American middle class. And so Rockefeller goes out and he hands out these shiny dimes, and it makes all the newspapers. Oh, he's a good guy deep down inside. He loves passing out, you know, money to people. And, you know, it cost him what? You know, $20? I mean, you know, he spent a couple hours passing out dimes. But it got so much play.
I agree with you. My point is that sometimes we have to move to the center or to the left, one baby step at a time. And, you know, if they're feeling that threatened, maybe that's a good sign.
Well, I think it's a good sign that they're feeling that threatened, but what they're trying to do is prevent us, we the people, from moving at all. And they're saying, okay, you know, if you've got, you know, desperately poor people and they're freaking out and they're going to vote this year, we're gonna take care of them. So that they'll think, well, everything's okay. These people are really good. We really can put our trust and faith in the hands of corporate America. They're going to take care of us.
I guess we'll have to see what happens in a year if they repeal it, huh?
Yeah. The question is, how? If you've got a drug that costs you 5 cents to make and you're selling it for $3, mm-hmm. and you offer somebody a discount so that they can buy it for 10 cents, I mean, you know. What's the problem, right? I mean, you can do that for a long, long time. And
it's absolutely true. I guess what I was saying is that it just strikes me as maybe a lot of the national dialogue that you and I and other people are creating right now, even if it's done out of fear, out of self-serving, or out of self-interest, maybe we're making a difference, and it's not a bad thing.
Well, okay. I'll go along with you there on that, Chuck. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I do think that this is a response. It's got to be a response to something, right? It's a response to populism. It's a response to the populism of the Kerry Edwards ticket, in my opinion, and it's an attempt to defeat that ticket so that they'll have the corporatism of the Bush ticket for another 4 years. It's just, you know, it's just to me as clear as the clock in front of me that says that it's 20 minutes before the hour. Let's ask Jim in Fort Wayne, Indiana, what he thinks. Hey, Jim, you're live and on the air here with Tom Hartman. What's up?
Yeah, Tom, how are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. And you?
I was listening earlier, and I caught the tail end of something you were talking about.
Oh, it's Jim, our trucker friend.
Yes.
You driving through Fort Wayne, Indiana?
Yes.
Okay.
And I caught the tail end of something you were talking about the Pakistani July surprise that the Republicans have in store for us.
Yes, well, they're trying. They're making every effort they can to make that happen.
Where did you get that?
Well, you're going to find it all over the web now that it's out. But the New Republic published it as one of their main stories yesterday on their website. It's a very fairly long, 3 or 4 page, well-researched, in-depth article with multiple sources inside Pakistan that are quoted, some of them by name. And it's TNR.com is the New Republic's website.
Okay. And who's the article by?
It's actually by three different authors, one of them in Karachi. And
it's called Inside Pakistan.
No, it's called July Surprise?
The title. Okay, I do appreciate it, Tom. Thank God for Tom Hartman. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate the call. 19 minutes before the hour, Bush. We were talking about Bush and Cheney. I just find this so ironic. And now here. I mean, Bush and Cheney and Halliburton, rather, you know, Kenny Boy. And now here, this from today's, but not from today's, this from the New York Daily News earlier this year. New York City's controller accused Vice President Dick Cheney's former employer, Halliburton, of taking blood money from state sponsors of terrorism such as Iran and Libya. And we know now that actually this initial charge was made before we knew the details. Cheney did either $78 or $87 million in business with Iraq, with Saddam Hussein, in the years, in the 2 years before he became vice president, as head of Halliburton, when it was illegal to do that. Well, how did they do that, you say? How is that possible? Well, here, this from the New York Daily News. Controller William Thompson, first of all, this is the guy who was in charge of the pension fund, who oversees an $80 billion pension fund for city workers, said cops and firefighters are outraged that their retirement portfolios include stock in U.S. firms getting fat off contracts with rogue nations like Iran, which funds the terror groups Hezbollah and Hamas, and is suspected of giving sanctuary to Al-Qaeda leaders. He told 60 Minutes, the revenue that is generated from the work of these companies are doing helps to underwrite and support terrorism. Iran and Libya are called terrorist states by the U.S., which bans American companies from doing business with them. But Halliburton, General Electric, ConocoPhillips, and other firms has set up offshore mail drops so their independent subsidiaries can skirt the laws, says Controller William Thompson in New York City. Consumer watchdog Roger Robinson told CBS that 400 companies in most pension portfolios are doing business with terror states this way. Halliburton, essentially, I guess, proving the point, Halliburton's spokeswoman Wendy Hall responds, New York Comptroller's office is wrong. There is no connection between Halliburton products and services and either terrorism or nuclear research. So she very carefully picks the name of the one American company, doesn't mention any of the offshore subsidiaries. And so now we find, and this very recently, the Security and Exchange Commission has finally opened a formal investigation into allegations that Halliburton funneled $180 million into a slush fund to pay bribes in the construction of a $6 billion Nigerian gas refinery. Now, the French have been probing this thing for a year with headlines in the newspapers like, you know, Dick Cheney criminal, Dick Cheney guilty of bribery, because he was the CEO of the company at the time. And this was the company had set up apparently had set up a $160 million slush fund. I mean, it's $180 million, excuse me, which is still unaccounted for. $180 million. There, Le Figaro and other French papers have, you know, been quoting this, talking about this, because there's a French prosecutor who is pursuing this thing. And they appeared to be pursuing a guy by the name of Stanley. His last name was Stanley, who was involved in this thing. He was a top KBR executive. And Kellogg Brown and Rudd has recently distanced themselves from him. But the slush fund was set up with Halliburton money by a London lawyer, Jeffrey Tesler, who worked for Halliburton at the same time he was financial advisor to the notoriously corrupt late Nigerian dictator General Sani Abacha, as a shelf company front called TriStar, which Tesler established in the British tax haven of Gibraltar. Stanley, the $5 million man, is a close friend and associate of Dick Cheney. And Halliburton has just, you know, cut him loose. Just, you know, said, we don't have anything to do with this guy. We don't know what's going on. We just, it's just a, we don't know. And is this going to close in on Dick Cheney? We'll see. You know, the final contract, this is from a story in The Nation, by the way, by Doug Ireland. The final contract for construction of the Nigerian refinery, one of the world's largest, was signed in 1999 on Cheney's watch. Cheney was CEO of Halliburton from 1995 to 2000. And bribes of the sort under investigation now by the SEC and the French are illegal under statutes of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, of whose international conventions both the United States and France are signatories, as well as under the U.S. Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So, could Dick Cheney be facing hard time in jail? Which brings us back to my, you know, perennial suggestion, thought, belief, that Cheney is going to be replaced on this ticket. We'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. You know, here's an example of just how far out this has gotten. And I'm aghast, frankly. I mean, it's just at times I'm just taken aback. I mean, it's almost more than you can imagine. You know, what could these guys have done to, for example, President George Bush, this from Reuters yesterday, President George Bush is disliked by more Hungarian secondary school children. Now, I was in Hungary, in Budapest, actually in Buda. You know, Budapest is like this city divided by the Danube, and one side is Buda and the other side is Pest. And, you know, it's anyhow, myself and a friend of mine, Jerry Schneiderman, an old business buddy of mine, he and I were there the week that the East Germans first were allowed to flee East Germany, and they were fleeing into Hungary. This was like about a week before the wall came down in Germany. I mean, first, you know, it didn't just all happen at once on one day. It took about 3 weeks, and there was this leakage that happened into other European countries. And the Hungarians were just, I mean, they were so pro-American. They loved Americans. They were, you know, this was after the fall of the Soviet Union. Hungary was a free and independent country. It had been a Soviet satellite state. And now, I remember that time there and you know, how kind everybody was to us. We were there on the anniversary of the freedom of Hungary. They had fireworks displays, the whole bit, you know, it was fascinating. President George W. Bush is disliked by more Hungarian secondary school children than former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, according to an opinion poll. A survey of 34,000 students aged 16 to 18. Now, these are kids old enough to be politically savvy. From 655 different high schools in Hungary showed Adolf Hitler was the most disliked foreign personality with 25% of the vote, followed by George Bush with 23% of the vote, and Osama bin Laden with 18% of the vote. Bush was even more unpopular than former Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin, who had put Hungary under subjection in the first place. I mean, it's really tragic, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's like you laugh and cry. It's really tragic what has happened to America's image around the world as a result of this guy. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award by claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackouts that deprived hospitals, schools, homes, and just about everybody else in California. And to make matters even worse, Reliant, at the time that it was intentionally shutting down its power plants, was publicly blaming the shutdowns on environmentalists.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House with three current and former top executives that are Rangers, people contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush re-election campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000.
So this is a highly partisan company, and that may explain why a company that has a criminal indictment against it would still be successful in securing prominent federal contracts.
Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Andersen were barred from federal contracts when they were in.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. John McCain is getting a lot of press coverage right now for a variety of reasons. The Republicans, of course, liking to... wanting you to believe that John Kerry wanted McCain to be his running mate, although Kerry has denied he ever asked McCain, and McCain has essentially said the same thing. McCain has, however, did on March 18th, said that George Bush asked him to be his running mate in 2000, and he turned him down, so Bush picked Cheney as his second choice. McCain's thoughts on George Bush's war are worthy of quoting. The Boston Herald noted on April 2nd, the Arizona Republic took on President Bush for failing to prepare Americans for a long involvement in Iraq, saying, instead of the Arizona Republican, John McCain, saying, quote, you can't fly in on an aircraft carrier and declare victory and have the deaths continue. You just can't do that. McCain goes on to say, I think several mistakes have been made. One was the lack of sufficient troops there, which allowed the looting to take place, which kind of established a lawless environment. I think it's probably because we didn't have sufficient plans to turn over the government as quickly as possible and a level of expectation that probably was unrealistic, which led to a certain amount of disappointment. But a lot of it had to do with a lack of sufficient troop strength at the time the combat phase was over. He said that on Meet the Press in May of this year. just a few months ago. On Larry King Live in April of this year, John McCain, quote, "I'm saying that the Iraq plan was not adequate. I'm saying it's not an accident that this was the bloodiest month of the war since combat ended. And we need to adjust. The signs are there that we needed to have more boots on the ground." The Boston Herald, April 2nd of this year, "Many people in this room question legitimately whether or not we should have gone in," said John McCain, adding that that debate will be part of this presidential campaign. He goes on to say, this was on CNN, April 16th, "I was there last August. I came back after talking with many, many people, and I was convinced we don't have enough boots on the ground," said the senator from Arizona and decorated Vietnam War veteran. Senator John McCain sharply criticized the Bush administration's conduct of the war, Iraq War Wednesday, says USA Today, saying the United States could send at least 15,000 more troops or risk, quote, "the most serious American defeat on the global stage since Vietnam." And on November 5th of last year, USA Today, McCain also challenged Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld's assertion that 132,000 troops in Iraq can defeat the insurgency. The simple truth, he said, we don't have enough forces in Iraq to meet our military objectives. Yeah, he's very happy with how this is going. Very happy. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. For a change.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Concerned about the offshoring of jobs overseas, U.S. Chamber of Commerce President Thomas Donahue has two words for you: stop whining. In a speech to a California audience last week, Donahue said offshoring saves companies money, which they can then use to create new jobs for Americans. Yet projections from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the fastest growing occupations over the next 8 years are overwhelmingly low wage. Government estimates also suggest as many as 250,000 jobs a year are lost to offshoring, but Donahue calls the figure anecdotal. Meanwhile, the California state legislator is debating two bills designed to stem the flow of jobs overseas. One would ban the use of offshoring by contractors doing work for the state. The other would require California companies to disclose how many jobs they transfer out of the country.
Jeffrey Sachs, special advisor to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, told reporters Wednesday on the eve of an Africa summit that countries in Africa won't be able to reach their goal of cutting poverty in half if they repay their foreign debts. Sachs called on wealthy countries to forgive Africa's $201 billion debt burden, but said if the debt isn't canceled, then African countries should refuse to repay, saying, quote, "The time has come to end this charade."
U.S. Pipe and Foundry has agreed to pay $6.5 million to settle a lawsuit filed by black employees that alleged discrimination. In addition, the Birmingham, Alabama-based firm said it will create a fairness advisory council to share job openings with all employees and to train supervisors not to discriminate. The lawsuit was filed in federal court in December of 2000. The agreement includes all employees employed between now and January 1998 at the company's plants in Tennessee, Alabama, and New Jersey. And it looks like Enron's biggest fish is now in the frying pan. former chairman Ken Lay was indicted by a federal grand jury in Houston yesterday. He's expected to face criminal charges related to insider trading, and he may be hit with civil penalties from the Securities and Exchange Commission. More than 20,000 employees lost more than $1 billion when Enron collapsed in 2001 and took their 401ks with it. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis of military discharge statistics by scholars at the University of California at Santa Barbara shows nearly 6,300 people were let go from the armed forces between 1998 and 2003 for violating its Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on homosexuality. 1% of those were officers. The majority were enlisted men. 770 soldiers were discharged last year for being gay, and the Army boots them out the most. It was responsible for 41% of all discharges in the past 6 years.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You put in 30 years at the company. You got good pay, health care. Then they send you a job overseas. And under George Bush, the company actually gets a tax break for doing it. Now Bush says we're in recovery. Then after a year, you finally land another job, and you wonder, is this what you worked your whole life for? We're not being led. We're being misled.
It's time for another Gooberhead Award, issued periodically to people in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's Goober goes to an organization that marches under the majestic banner of Move America Forward. MAF would have you believe that it's a nonpartisan mass movement of patriots supporting our troops and the commander-in-chief in the war on terrorism. But the majesty of this outfit shrinks to minuscule when you peek behind MAF's red, white, and blue curtain and see that it's nothing but three pathetic right-wingers with a Mr. Microphone. Move America Forward is a front group set up only last month by the Republican PR firm of Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, which pocketed some $2.5 million in payments from Republican politicians in the last election cycle. Far from being patriots, these hired flacks set up MAF to engage in a decidedly unpatriotic act of selectively canceling the First Amendment. What has their knickers in a knot is that Michael Moore's dynamite new movie, Fahrenheit 9-1-1, is being shown in theaters all across America. Apparently, Russo, Marsh, and Rogers don't believe in the principles of free speech and open debate, at least not if these principles allow open criticism of their beloved King George the W. So these gooberheads launched MAF to trash Moore and try to prevent theaters from presenting his movie. On their website, they publish the addresses of major theater chains, asking rabid Bush supporters to deluge the chains with demands to shut out Moore. Tell the industry executives that we don't want this misleading and grotesque movie being shown in our local cinema, shriek the PR hacks. This is Jim Hightower saying, whether or not you like Moore, no true American can like this goofy, totally un-American stab at censorship. The best way to show up these goobers is to go see the movie and judge it for yourself. That's the American way.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use as directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite and beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Our number 1-866, it's one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to participate in the program today, if you'd like to drop into our chat room, which is full, and it's not full as in you can't get in, but there's a lot of folks in there having a fascinating conversation about corporate media, interestingly enough, among other things. You can go to TomHartman.com and click on the chat button. It'll take you there. And into the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, actually, is where we hold our chats. And no cost. You don't have to be a CompuServe or AOL member. If you are, just put in your screen name and password. If you're not, you can sign up right there, and there's no fee, no credit card necessary, no charge. They just, you know, you have to give an email address so that they can keep track of trolls and spammers and stuff like that. Anyhow, welcome back. The Senate considered this is an absolutely amazing story. This here, you know, John McCain's been in the news a lot. I guess this is here we go again. There was a spending bill, Pentagon budget bill, that was before the Senate, and one of the Democratic members of the United States Senate, Pat Leahy, in fact, my senator, one of my senators. Pat Leahy tacked or proposed tacking an amendment onto this bill, this appropriations bill for the Pentagon, that would require George W. Bush or the president, let's say, because it would apply to future presidents as well, would require the president to abide by the Geneva Convention. Now, you know, you would not think that that's a big deal, right? You've got to abide by the Geneva Convention. Well, the Republicans reacted as if this piece of this rider, this amendment that Pat Leahy had come up with was, I can't think of an appropriately absurd metaphor, but they got hysterical. I mean, they sent out this frantic email from the Republican Policy Committee to all the Republican senators with talking points, saying that the problem was not that the president was failing to comply with the Geneva Convention. The problem is an out-of-control media and widespread hysteria. Those are the exact words from it. Right? And the George Bush, of course, had in a document, now we know from 2 years ago, I mean, we just learned this right in the last few weeks, that 2 years ago George Bush signed a document prepared by John Ashcroft. It was originally put together by Alberto Gonzalez, his White House counsel, who some say he wants to appoint to the Supreme Court, and J.S. Bybee, who was an attorney in the White House. And this document said that George Bush did not have to conform to the Geneva Convention. It was a memo on how to get around the laws against torture. Right? Now, the Bush administration has since said that the memo is something that, even though they signed it, they really didn't intend to do it. George signed it, and John Ashcroft recommended it, and Jay Bybee, but it really wasn't credible. No, we didn't really intend to do that. And then, of course, George W. Appoints J.S. Bybee, the guy who put together this thing, to a lifetime seat on the Federal Appeals Court. Now, he's a terrible lawyer. He writes up these awful things that say that I don't have to conform to the Geneva Conventions or the War Crimes Act. He's just no good at all. Just doesn't know what he's talking about. By the way, make him a federal judge for the rest of his life. This is what happened. So Pat Leahy tacks on this amendment to the Senate Pentagon budget bill that says that the president has to abide by the Geneva Convention. The Republicans go ballistic trying to prevent this thing from passing. And it, you know, saying that it, quote, inappropriately intrudes into the president's powers. Inappropriately. For the United States Senate, which is supposed to make the laws. See, the president is not supposed to make the laws. The president could sign a law, a bill into law. Or a bill can become law without his signature if it has, you know, a two-thirds majority of the House and Senate behind it. They can ignore him, and it becomes law. So the Republicans just got all hysterical about this thing, and guess who caused it to become law? Five Republicans voted in favor of it, and they were Mike DeWine, Arlen Specter, Chuck Hagel, Lindsey Graham, and sure enough, John McCain. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Fiona in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Fiona, what's up?
Yes, good morning, Tom. I just spent an hour trying to find your new number. I apologize. I have a very quick comment about the Pfizer question from Chuck from Santa Fe. I just heard a very, very brief announcement where Pfizer, I believe now, is really doing a big push for polio vaccinations in Africa.
Hmm.
And, you know, much like that I would like to believe they're doing good, I also think that maybe that's a whole new market.
Yeah, here's the bottom line, Fiona.
I'm very happy to get off the line because I'm in a very hot car.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll let you off. Thanks for the call. Thanks, Fiona. Here's the bottom line. Whenever a corporation does, quote, good, you know, it's a laudable thing. I mean, you know, we all want to say, isn't it wonderful? What Fiona's talking about is the discussion that we'd had about Pfizer now offering deep discounts on their pharmaceuticals to poor people. And, of course, they'll still be making a profit, presumably. I mean, some of these drugs, you know, they charge $1.50 a pill for things that cost them 5 cents to make because they have a patent on them and they can do it. You know, they just do it because they can do it. It's why the pharmaceutical industry is more profitable than any other industry in America. But here's the bottom line. By law, there was actually a Supreme Court decision about this. By law, whenever a corporation takes any action whatsoever, they must be able to defend that action in the context of this action at some point in the future will increase our profits by law. So if a corporation gives charitable contributions, they have to really call that, I mean, you can call it charitable contributions, but really they would have to justify it as public relations and say, well, the PR value we're going to get out of this is going to cause us to be more profitable. If you fail, if you are a senior executive of a corporation and you take actions that do not enhance the bottom line, you have, according to the United States Supreme Court, if it's a for-profit corporation, you have failed to perform the required fiduciary responsibilities that you hold as an executive or an officer in that corporation or a director of that corporation. Which is very straightforward. So you don't have to ask, you know, gee, why would Pfizer offer discounts to people? The answer has to be there's something that they're going to get out of it. You know, whether it's that they're going to get the contract to do polio vaccines for Africa and that's going to be very profitable, or whether it's that they're going to prevent, you know, this is an end run around John Kerry and John Edwards populism, and that's going to help, you know, take that issue away from the Democrats and reelect George Bush, who is very super corporate friendly, particularly for the pharmaceutical industry, one of his major patrons. You know, we don't have to know exactly what it is or exactly why it is. Brian in New Jersey is on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yesterday or today, Tom Ridge, he's warning us about, you know, Al-Qaeda attacks aimed at U.S. elections again.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the same time, it was either yesterday or the day before, Sybil Edmonds, the translator for the FBI, who was the whistleblower, saying that the FBI isn't doing a sufficient amount of translation, that, you know, there's gaps, and then that was thrown out of court, and Ashcroft seemed to make all those documents classified. I guess he was afraid of something come out.
Retroactively. He went back 2 years ago. She testified in open session before Congress, and he retroactively classified it. So now members of the United States Congress, the House and Senate, cannot speak about this anymore.
Right, and that's what my question is. My question is how does he have the right to do that? And even if he has the right to do that, how can, again, we the people stop him from doing that?
Well, the only way that he can be stopped from doing that sort of thing is if the Democrats were to have control of one of the houses of Congress. I mean, that's the bottom line. Is it because the Republicans have control of both the House and Senate, they have blocked numerous proposals to investigate the actions of this administration, and they just stopped them. You know, Bill Frist in the Senate and Tom DeLay in the House of Representatives control what comes to the floor. And they just stop it. And that's, you know, the only reason that Nixon ended up, you know, facing what he did with Watergate was because the Democrats had control of the Senate. And the only reason that Bill Clinton faced the impeachment proceedings that he did was because Republicans had control of the House. And you know, on it goes, right? So when the Democrats get, you know, hopefully after this election, Democrats get control of one or both of those legislative bodies, then you can see a pushback. But right now, with the Republicans in control of the judiciary, the executive branch, the presidency, and both the House and the Senate, nobody, you know, there is no way for the Democrats to have enough political push to make any kind of an investigation happen.
If and when we do get the Democrats, I mean, not we, but the Democrats get control of the Senate and they want to, let's say, pardon these people, is there a way that we can say, no, I'm sorry, I don't think they should be pardoned, and, you know, uprise and say, hey, that's not right.
Well, you know, we the people can always speak out. We can always speak out very loudly, and we've done that in the past, and it has brought about changes, sometimes agonizingly slowly, as with the Vietnam War, but it does bring about changes, and so I think, yeah, I think that we all have an obligation, not just to vote, but to be
writing
outspoken.
And yeah, calling and all that.
Writing letters to the editor, to call talk shows, to call the, you know, newspapers and radio stations, and tell as many friends as you can. You know, get out there and just, you know, start pestering people. Thanks for the call, Brian. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. And we got to go to a break here. And just say, I got a couple more calls I want to get to, but I want to give them enough time to actually speak. George Bush celebrated the 4th of July by praising veterans, saying, "We're very proud of your services." However, in 2002, veteran officials were ordered by George Bush to, quote, "cease efforts to enroll new patients into the veterans' health care system," end quote. The directive said it was inappropriate for local Veterans Administration workers to educate veterans about their eligibility or to enroll them in health care programs. Yeah. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
an ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, a call to take back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So a new
and welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Roberta in New Mexico is in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Or it's actually a little town with a different name, isn't it, Roberta?
Oh, Caliente.
Oh, Caliente. There you go.
Where I happily live on the third world ranchito and enjoy, even though I don't have to own it to do that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful here. My goats clean it up. Billy Heroes, you know, they're going to save the Southwest.
Yes, and I should let our listeners know you are our resident activist. You've actually served hard time in jail for breaking into missile facilities, was it?
Well, no, just making the symbolic effort at the Minuteman missile cycle.
Yeah.
But also before that in Minneapolis at the Honeywell Project,
mm-hmm.
Where I was in the workhouse and did a hunger strike for cruel, unusual punishment. Was enthusiastically supported by the other inmates.
That's great.
Were
killers. Yeah, so what's up, Roberta?
What I got. Vive la France, first of all, for having the fortitude to take to task our notorious domestic scoundrels and criminals. I hope it works. I have a feeling that
you're talking about their possible prosecution of Dick Cheney?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, they also have tried to do Kissinger before. I don't know what happened with that. But I have a feeling, I'm very hopeful today. I was playing on my Fusion keyboard the song of God Bless America, which I always thought was corny when Kate Smith sang it, but I found myself in tears playing it because the words "stand beside her and guide her" is what we need to do, we the people.
Yeah.
And And I want to bring up the Pfizer thing, too, as you so astutely noted, is a token, and I'm sure temporary form, to quell any possible senior revolt on the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, it's the same reason.
The fact that welfare, the social contract of welfare by FDR was also a brilliantly and more widespread same thing. You know, welfare is not socialism. It really has nothing to do with socialism. Welfare is a capitalist reform, and wisely done to give everyone enough of a slice of the pie.
Yeah, it's well said.
Survive.
Yeah, well said. Because socialism is the control of the means of manufacture and distribution by the government.
Middle and lower middle, according to one's ability and for someone's need. It's a huge working class union, actually. Was at its inception,
yeah.
But it eliminates the super rich and the poverty stricken homeless.
Well, it doesn't eliminate it, but
in America we have the opportunity, and I hope you will pursue this at Oxford. We have the opportunity to assimilate our unique fascism, which is written, as you said, with this law that said they have to profit.
Yeah, Roberta, what's your point?
The point is that we have to assimilate. I think in America we have to make the contract more equitable for all.
Thank you, and more clear. I absolutely agree with you. People don't get it, that there is this thing called, thank you very much, Roberta, there is this thing called the social contract, and that it has been part of America since the founding. It's why the pursuit of happiness is written into the Declaration of Independence. And we have collectively decided that there's a certain type of world, of nation, in which we would like to live. I've worked in third world countries. Do we really want to live in a world, in a country, in a nation, where when you walk out your door, there are starving children with their hands out? And I mean, that, because that is literally the state of things in many countries of the world. Or would we rather say, okay, we're, you know, just out of purely selfish reasons, you know, we would rather live in a country where there's more of a middle class and fewer starving people. We can make that happen. Very, very straightforward, very easy. Well said, Roberta. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum, a public citizen, outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with three current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Andersen were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The festival was over and the boys were all planning for a fall.
And welcome back.
The cabaret was quiet except for the drilling in the wall.
Tom Hartman here with you. 27 and a half minutes before the hour.
The cabaret had been lifted and the gambling wheel shut down. Anyone with any sense had already
Bob Dylan is awesome, isn't he?
He was standing in the doorway looking like the Jack of Hearts.
Yes. Looking like the Jack. Welcome back. I'm sorry. I guess every now and then my roots from 30 years ago as a DJ show up. I used to love playing music on the radio. Used to just love it. Had you noticed, by the way, that while it was reported in the New York Times and some other media picked it up, that Saddam had said. When he was dragged into court, and I quote, "Everyone knows this is a theatrical comedy by Bush, the criminal, in an attempt to win the election." Right now, that was printed. That was in our print media. But had you noticed that it wasn't shown on any of the video clips that made the evening news? I mean, that would have been the main clip, right? Don't you think? I mean, that's probably the most sensational thing he said. Never appeared. Why? Well, it turns out the Pentagon censored it. The Pentagon took the videotape away from the networks and then gave it back to them sliced up. In fact, Dan Rather said, quote, this in the CBS Evening News, said the tapes have been, quote, taken to another location, edited, and what you're seeing is in effect a censored version, end quote, of what happened in court earlier today. Today being last week, but still. Now it comes out why we didn't see that clip. I find that fascinating. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in. Armin in Florida's on the line. Hey, Armin, you're in Tampa?
Sarasota, Bradenton area.
Ah, Sarasota, that's right. Okay. What's up?
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking. The way I see it is the 42% higher health insurance premiums
in 3 years.
4% higher pharmaceutical costs.
Right, over the last 3 years.
$48 billion monthly trade deficit. Have you heard that yet?
No, $48 billion a month? Yeah, it's averaging.
Highest monthly ever, $48 billion trade deficit.
Yeah.
And we've lost over 3 million good manufacturing jobs that paid over $40,000 plus a year. Our dollar's going down the tubes. The super-rich corporations are giving record numbers of money to the Republicans and the Bush crime family. So would you explain to all us and Brad, if you have enough time, because you're very elegant the way you speak and you're very articulate in your facts, would you explain to us the big difference between a free market and a free monopoly?
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. A free market is a phrase that is largely without meaning, at least not in a positive sense. I mean, as you know, Armin, historically, this is what Adam Smith warned about back in 1776 when he wrote what was the title of his book? Whatever Adam Smith wrote, Boy, I hate it when that happens, don't you? Anyhow,
I can't think of it either, but I know the book you're talking about.
Yeah.
When you did that, you made me draw.
There you go. I mean, it's
see how it works?
Yeah, there you go. But anyhow, Adam, you know, and he talked about the invisible hand in the marketplace, and that phrase, Wealth of Nations was his book, and that phrase appeared in Wealth of Nations only once. And that once that it appears in that book, it appears in the context of a warning. Smith in that book repeatedly warns about what would happen in a laissez-faire, a free market economy, if there was not participation in that economy and regulation of that economy by the human beings who are affected by the commercial activities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Not corporations and their, quote, pardon me for saying this, media whores.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's...
politician whores.
Yeah, it's very, very clear. I mean, it's very clear. Right from the very founding of this country, the understanding was that, and Jefferson talked about this at length. There's a whole chapter about this in a book that I have coming out. Actually, it should be shipping this next week. It's called What Would Jefferson Do? And I spent the last 4 years just reading his letters and his autobiography and all this stuff, pulled it all together. And he, when he was president of the United States in 1804, he secretly, because Napoleon was head of France at the time, and Napoleon, this would have been like a declaration of war. There was a French economist by the name of Desuet de Tracy, and I never studied French. My pronunciation is probably wrong, but anyhow, that's how I think he pronounced it, and kind of Tracy, right? And Tracy had some just really extraordinary and brilliant insights into how economies work, and Jefferson read this book in the French because he was fluent in French as well as he was fluent in five languages, and he was so impressed by it, he said, this has to be available in English, and he translated it at the request of one of the French guys who had actually fought in the American Revolution, Lafayette, General Lafayette, who was back in France. Jefferson translated this thing into English, and they smuggled it back into France, and then over into England, where it got published. And it really upset Napoleon because he was running this kind of dictatorship. And just laid out these principles of taxation and of regulation of the marketplace in a way that the marketplace can advance and grow and people can make money and they can do well, and at the same time, we the people can have a functioning democracy. And Jefferson was quite outspoken about it. And everybody understood this right up until the era of the robber barons. And then we kind of lost track. A couple of generations go by and people forget. And then, the robber barons came along in the 1880s, 1890s, 1900, 1910. By that time, the middle class had been wiped out. And the people were rebelling. And ultimately, of course, that led to Roosevelt in the 30s and reminding us, really going back to Jefferson's ideals. And now we're back in another forgetting period, or at least we were, say, 10 years ago. And I think we're starting to wake up, Armin. Don't you get the sense that people are waking up around you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think you got to understand, too, that I think it's very unjust. It's very unfair. And I really consider it to be very criminal to have a media that's so powerful as our media is and be able to pay off people to go on there and to deliberately, deceptively, intentionally make an art and a living, a big living, out of telling half-truths and misappropriately taking things out of context for the purpose of deception and moving the economic agenda of their masters forward. Yeah. I think it's just criminal. It's as bad as what the Nazis have done.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to disagree with you there. Our media hasn't killed millions of people yet.
Wait a minute. What about all the wars that we should have never went into that were just for corporations and Look at all the people. I mean, it's terrible what the Nazis did, but why did it get so far as it got to where it got to World War II?
Well, see,
how many
and that's
died in war, how many people died in World War II, Tom?
Yeah, I don't know the number.
How many?
Frankly, I don't know, Armin. It's
150 million, wasn't it?
I know it was over 100 million. I don't know.
So look at all the people died. Why did it go as far as it went? Because it was absolute conspiracies. In my opinion, of bankers and business people, you know, Japan and Germany and all these countries, they just didn't wake up one day and become powerful and have this agenda that they were going to roll.
No, it was laid out.
It was all planned and financed. And
yep, it was laid out. It was laid out very clearly. And thank you for making the point, Armin, because you make it so well. It was laid out very clearly by Benito Mussolini back in the late 1920s, when he said, you know, let's create a form of government that is not going to be easily taken over, that is going to be able to resist other nations, that's going to be strong. We don't have to worry about these frivolous things like individual liberty, freedom. These are not, you know, important values when the survival of a nation is at stake. So let's create a bundle. You know, his symbol, Mussolini's symbol for this new form of governance, he thought it was new. It wasn't new, actually. It was just a reinvention of feudalism, an ancient form of governance. But, you know, it was the bundle of sticks, the fasce. And it's called fascism. And fascism, by dictionary definition of Benito Mussolini, is the merging of business and state interests. And this is what the founders were so opposed to, with the possible exception of Alexander Hamilton, who was, you know, who they're trying to resurrect now, right? I mean, you know, last it was Adams, now it's Hamilton. These two guys were basically the two major conservatives of the revolutionary generation. So, of course, they're getting all this publicity right now. It's fascinating. And without discussing the crimes, you know, you read the biography of John Adams out there, and never talks, well, it does talk about it, but very, very briefly, about the major event of the entire John Adams presidency, the thing that brought him down, the reason why Jefferson beat him in the election ultimately, was because of the Alien and Sedition Acts, because he passed something that was like the Patriot Act that would just, you know, wiped people out. The Senate has confirmed this, on Tuesday, the Senate confirmed President Bush's nomination of Leon Holmes to the U.S. District Court for the East District of Arkansas. Holmes has callously, says People for the American Way, callously dismissed the rights of women seeking abortion. He's even minimized the situation of women who become pregnant as a result of rape, stating concern for rape victims is a red herring, because conceptions from rape occur with approximately the same frequency as snowfall in Miami. In fact, studies estimate that between 25,000 and 32,000 women each year become pregnant as a result of rape in the U.S., and about 50% of those end in abortions. That would be a really tough one. You know, that would be a really tough one, I think. So, a very difficult and unpleasant decision to be making. The economy, the United States economy, you can hear, you know, it's really quite remarkable. You look around and just a few headlines, just from the last two or three days, right? The Associated Press, July 3rd, U.S. growth slows down in June. Boston Herald, July 3rd, slow growth dogs economy. The Philadelphia Inquirer, another disappointment, slow jobs growth in June. CBS Market Watch, U.S. stocks tumble on jobs data, technical warnings. But the signs for July are even worse. Wages are falling behind inflation. A new and disturbing report on economic services is cause for worry, and oil prices are jumping. Lagging growth at Reuters, July 6th. Lagging growth, wage growth, a worry for economies. Salary increases are falling short of inflation. Here's this story from Reuters. Wage increases are falling far short of inflation, suggesting workers may have trouble keeping up with the economic recovery. Economists worry that the recent softening in retail sales could be partly due to the failure of wages to catch up with the economic growth, or to catch up with inflation. I mean, people, in other words, are earning, yeah, you're earning 1.7% on average more, but the rate of inflation is 3%. So you're actually falling behind. The sluggish wage recovery, the New York Times, there's plenty of reason to worry that this expansion is not raising wages as much as American families need. Bloomberg News, July 3rd, 2.2% rise in wages in the 12 months through May has been more than offset by a 3.1% gain in consumer prices. They're quoting 2.2% of the wage and wage increase. Paul Krugman in the New York Times says it's 1.7%, lagging behind inflation. In fact, he quotes the president of Aetna, one of the nation's biggest health insurers, who recently told investors. Now, why would the president of Aetna say this to investors? Because it's good news for an insurance company. He said, it's fair to say that a lot of jobs being created now, today, may not be the kind of jobs that come with benefits. Aetna, of course, is in the business of selling those benefits to people. So this is like good news. This is good news. We got a lot of people out there who have no health insurance, no benefits, no pension, nothing. We can sell something to them. The Institute for Supply Management's non-manufacturing data showed the overall growth index fell to 59.9 in June from 65.2 in May. According to Reuters, taken in the context of a recent pullback in economic data, some economists viewed the report as more evidence that growth has started to ebb. Now, you'll recall last week, or was it early this week? I don't recall. Anyhow, George W. Bush, when the job numbers had come out for June and showed that 115,000 jobs had been created, and actually 35,000 of those were not actually June jobs. They went back to May and April and said, oh, we overestimated by 35,000, so we're going to reduce those months and add. And then they said, okay, and we'll add that 35,000 to June and see then in July we can go back and recalibrate June. So there was 35,000 kind of just thrown in there. But you have to have around 150,000 jobs a month just to keep up with the number of people who are becoming of working age and coming into the workplace. I mean, we actually have, we're growing right now. Yes, there are people dying and getting out of the workplace and that sort of thing, but we have to add about 150,000 jobs a month. The average during the Clinton administration was over 250,000 jobs a month being added. And so Bush says, hey, 115,000 jobs, isn't that wonderful? No, it's not enough to keep up. It's why the unemployment rate is unchanged. It's not enough to keep up with just, people coming into the workplace. Florida shows greater drop in income. This, I thought, was very interesting. And this bodes perhaps poorly for the Republicans as time goes on here. Florida, if you live in Florida and earn a living, the average wage in Florida right now is 7% below what it was in 2000 when adjusted for inflation. In Mississippi, it is 8.8% less than it was. In Missouri, it's 7.8% less than it was. Nationally, 0.8% less than it was. Pretty amazing. Hey, Billy in Santa Cruz, 1-866-889-894. We've only got about 30 seconds here, Billy. What's up?
All it takes, Big Tom.
Okay.
In a nutshell, I was watching Nightline last night. Did you happen to see it?
I didn't.
Okay, so last night, Nightline was about how the kleptocracy that America has become has even hit the hospitals, specifically charitable hospitals, like New York Presbyterian,
mm-hmm.
completely ripping people off, charging twice as much to poor people as they do to the government or you and me.
Amazing. Billy, stick around. Let's get into that a little more. I'd like to learn a little bit more about that. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award by claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackouts that deprived hospitals, schools, homes, and just about everybody else in California. And to make matters even worse, Reliant, at the time that it was intentionally shutting down its power plants, was publicly blaming the shutdowns on environmentalists.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House with three current and former top executives that are Rangers, people contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000.
So this is a highly partisan company, and that may explain why a company that has a criminal indictment against it would still be successful in securing prominent federal contracts.
Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Andersen were barred from federal contracts when they were in.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I've been meek and hard like an oak. I've seen pretty people disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear. If you want me, honey, baby, I'll be here.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Coming up on 4 minutes before the hour, we were talking with Billy in Santa Cruz, California. Hey, Billy, before you continue here, I just wanted to share real quickly with you. Edward Albert Filene. He was born in 1869.
Filene's Basement?
That's right. Filene's Basement. The Filene's Department Store. He died in 1937. He was the founder of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And he's quoted as saying, "Why shouldn't the American people take half my money? I took all of it from them." And then following that quote on Citizens for Tax Justice website, they note, Filene of Boston's Filene's Department Stores founded the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to encourage businesses to contribute to the welfare of their communities. He eventually quit the organization he founded, disappointed that it had become a bastion of right-wing conservatism and an anti-tax lobby. Isn't that tragic?
It's tragic, and the facts.
Yeah.
And the facts are usually tragic in America today.
Yeah, increasingly. Well, we can change that. I really think we can change that.
I don't believe that, unfortunately.
Well, I think
Why
people are waking up.
Why do you believe that? I mean, that's the difference between you and me. You are still an optimist in the face of Look, the fact is that if you and I haven't stolen anything today, we're not part of America's best and brightest. The president's a thief. The vice president's a thief. The biggest companies, the Enrons, they're all thieves. So...
And Americans are waking up. Billy, Americans really are waking up. I mean, it's really and truly happening. In some ways, you could argue, and in fact, in some ways, I will argue, that George Bush was the best thing that could have happened. It was really, if Al Gore had been elected, who knows? George Bush has awakened so many people in the United States and all around the world. I think it's really a great thing.
Yeah, exactly. Unless this happens. And that is, if he steals, and I do mean that, if he steals this election, and then all of America knows he's not that great a guy, and he's stolen the election,
then he'll go down
the same. By the fact that I'm not man enough, and neither are you, it sounds like, to stand up and fight for this country.
No, he'll go down the same way Nixon did. See, this is not an era where you can have a revolution with
people. How can
people,
you go down the way Nixon did if the courts are in their control too?
Yeah.
By the way, I agree with you. You can't have a revolution in a middle class country.
Yeah. I think we were by and large a middle class country before, but in the 1700s anyhow. But I just don't think that the weaponry is that. It's not an appropriate way to make change.
Well, I agree with you. It's not appropriate, but
it just doesn't work. Billy, thanks for the call. We got a boogie here. It's the end of the show, but great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby for streaming us around the world, to Jay for writing and producing our theme music. Thanks to our sponsors, especially Small Dog Electronics, the folks in our chat room, and to you for listening. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place. See you then.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it.